And tonight we're going to be talking about the soul, soul proof, as a matter of fact. Mark Pitstick joins us, and he asks some of the basic questions, the fundamental questions we all do. Who are we? Where are we? What happens when you die? Is there a God? We'll be talking with Mark in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Mark Pitstick. Mark has more than 40 years experience in training in hospitals, pastoral counseling settings, mental health centers, private practice. He began having clairvoyant experiences around the age of 10 and has been blessed with numerous miracles and spiritual transformations. He is certified in past life regression therapy by the great Dr. Brian Weiss, a regular guest on Coast to Coast, our dear friend Raymond Moody as well. He is the director of education for the Eternia.org. Now, that's an organization started by another Coast to Coast guest, Dr. Eben Alexander, and, of course, our friend the late Edgar Mitchell. And John Audette, of course, merges science and spirituality. Geez, Mark, you know everybody we know.
Well, it's a wonderful crowd to hang with. How are you doing, George?
It sure is, Mark. Good to have you with us as well. Let's go back to the beginning for you, how you got involved in some of this, because that always fascinates me. Was there a moment in your life that transformed you, or how did you do this?
Yeah, I think it was a combo platter. When I was 6 years old, my parents were showing me a beautiful sunset, and I told them it reminded me of God. And we were brought up Lutherans, so it was always God the Father, you know, big guy in the sky image. And they only told me about that 20 years later when I was in theology school. So that suggests, along with some other independent information from psychics and energy readers, that I never totally forgot where I came from before I came to Earth. And so I was different. I discovered yoga on my own when I was 12. I'd be in the living room doing twists, and I later found out were standard yoga postures. And I would throw a rubber baseball against the step for an hour and realize my mind was somewhere else, and that was my introduction to meditation. But things really took, well, as you say, clairvoyant experiences starting really when I was 8, 10, 12, every year or so. And things that I teach about now, there's no fiery eternal hell and the nature of heaven and so on. But things really took off when I was about 20, working in hospitals as a respiratory therapist, seeing almost every day, being right there with people as they died, especially little children.
And, oh, my God.
One, for example, my first Kodak, I went through 6 months of training, and I could do things back then that only physicians could do now, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, putting the tube down the lungs for breathing, arterial blood gas punctures, etc. And so I was all excited to save lives, running down to the ER, and it was a little five-year-old boy who had been run over by a truck while walking to kindergarten. And we worked on him for 4 hours. Despite our best efforts, he died. And it was the only time, by the way, I'd ever seen doctors and nurses cry and hug each other. It was that touch.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And I staggered out of the ER just in time to see the head doc tell his parents that their only child had died. And I saw their faces contort in grief. And I went outside and literally shook my fist to the sky and said, God, what good are you?
Why?
First of all, I'm not even sure you exist, but I'd always been taught God was all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful. I said, if that's the case, why didn't you save that little boy? And if you could have and didn't, what kind of sick bastard are you? And so that began then a period of agnosticism, atheism even, but ultimately led to me searching for 30 years and be able to sit with people whose children have died, loved ones, mm-hmm. suicide, and so on, and give them sensible, evidence-based answers.
You know, and I can see how you could become agnostic, even an atheist, when events like that happen. I've always questioned things, Mark, when you read the Bible and they talk about the flood of Noah killing all these people who were on the planet at the time. In Genesis, God was a violent, violent God. And I could never, at a young age, understand how someone that was supposed to be so benevolent, so loving, so caring could also be that cruel and do things like that. And I wrestled with myself for years.
And lots of people do, and they tell me now. And so you weren't alone, and I wasn't alone. There were lots of us. Just some people keep searching, and others just, you know, play along or settle.
Did you change? Do you still have faith now?
Oh, I have complete faith. I know that not only is God loving us, and we're each part of that phenomena. We're one with the one. It's a beautiful setup. I can't imagine how life could be designed any better when you see the big picture and understand some of the details. I'd love to talk about that this evening.
We're going to talk about various questions that you have been asking yourself, I think, all your life. And as we get into this, Mark, I'm curious to see if you have answers, because for many of these questions, I'm not sure there are definitive answers.
Well, actually, it turns out there's tons of evidence to, say, strongly indicate, you know, it's impossible to say this is the truth 100%, but we have multiple indicators, sometimes from different cultures and times, that are saying the same thing. And before we get rolling, I'd like to say that my answers are based on research and near-death experience, after-death contacts, scientific research and their views, past life regression input, spiritual regression is the work of Michael Newton, perinatal findings from authentic mediums, research by people like Gary Schwartz, and also firsthand experience. So lots of foundation behind it.
We're going to get into a number of things with Mark Pitstick, including, of course, are there ghosts? Are they real? What's the soul? Just a lot of this. But let me start with the fundamental question, Mark, that all of us probably try to wrestle with all the time. Why are we here? Why are we here?
Well, I like to use acronyms because they help us remember. And so a great acronym for why am I here is that of SAGE, S-A-G-E. So you could say SAGE training. And the four letters stand for service, adventure, growth, and enjoyment. So we're here to serve others, and we're here to love our neighbors as ourselves. We're here for adventures with. I think that's one reason we love suspenseful books and movies and so on. So they remind us why we as souls will come to a place like this. It's so difficult, but also so rich and exciting. You know, forever is a long, long time, and so we as souls like to have little adventures and vacations that seem to us from a human perspective to be scary, painful eyes, but really are a blink of an eye, a little play that our souls attend for a short while. Growth, we learn the most when we're up against the wall, when we go through tough times. I'm sure you've experienced that.
Sure have.
And then enjoyment. You know, there are physical pleasures we can enjoy here that we can't as fully as when we're in a non-physical realm. So lots of compelling reasons why we as souls would come here.
Does the soul create the individual's personality?
That's a great question. And these terms are used in different ways by different people. And I think that's part of what we need to do as we advance in understanding of what consciousness is, try to get a more commonly agreed upon vocabulary. But as I use it, the personality is synonymous with the mind. And so that's the net sum of our proclivities, our inclinations, our memories, our likes, dislikes. You know how some people are bullheaded and some people are more calm. So there's that aspect. And then the soul is a combination, in my way of thinking, of the personality, the mind, and then pure spirit. And so some souls are evolved souls. They're very godlike. They know they're one with the one. And some souls, this is their first time around, and I think some of them are been running for president, and yeah, they're easy to spot.
When an individual dies, I'm jumping ahead here, but I want to try to get this answer.
Go right ahead, let's flow.
When an individual dies, then the soul leaves the body, and it goes, where does it go?
Well, first of all, there's nowhere to go. You know, our thinking is so based on separation, and there's here and there's there. And so I like to joke that, you know, people use words like the other side. So what happens? You leave our planet and you travel through space, and then at some point you see a sign. you are now approaching the other side. So there's no this side and the other side. And I think a lot of our old images used to be just like God was a big guy in the sky. Well, when you die, you go a zillion trillion miles up away somewhere. When in fact, we all know it's right here now. You know, Ram Dass said it beautifully 40 years ago. Be here now. That's all that's going on. So it's not like the soul travels a long way away. It's just that it drops the body, which is the word they use in India, drop the body, or Native Americans said, change worlds. And so when then you no longer have this physical shell, a lot of people can't see you, but in fact, you're still right here. But it turns out a lot of people can, sensitive people, now that there's not the concern about being burned at the stake or considered a witch, more and more people are allowing themselves to experience more of what is, and it was always right there.
Do souls communicate with each other?
They certainly can, especially primary souls. A lot of this is based on Michael Newton's work, really helped us understand the various possibilities after we die in spirit worlds. But it turns out that most of us have about 20 primary soulmates and a larger number of secondary and tertiary ones. And these are the ones that we hang out with over time. These are also the ones who fill in the cast and crew for our life's plays that we have.
Mark, when we die and that soul then moves on, then it comes back. If you believe in reincarnation, it comes back. What's the barometer for that to come back? I mean, do we pick where we want to go? Are we forced to come back? What happens?
Yeah, we're not forced. This is a free will universe, but souls eventually choose to come back almost always because of, again, the wonderful opportunities for growth here that aren't possible. If you look at spirit world, it's like a classroom, and you have lectures, and you discuss and everything, but Earth is where the rubber really hits the road. And so I liken it to going to a gym. You know, you could mentally visualize yourself curling weight, and you know, you might get a little muscle growth from that, but there's nothing like picking up the dumbbells and really sweating, and that's kind of like coming to Earth. So it gives us a chance to apply our lessons, see how well we've done. By the way, if I may, I got an email about an hour ago from one of your listeners, and she said, I don't know if I'll be awake by the time you get on, but could you please answer this question? It has to do with reincarnation.
Okay.
And so her name's Laura, and she said, Laura. So a dear friend passed on about 30 years ago, and this Laura has ESP abilities, so can still talk to this loved one and also the deceased sister. And so the question is, if I still speak to her on the other side, how can there be reincarnation? That is, if she's still talking to me, how can there be reincarnation if they're still speaking to me? And the answer is that things are not black and white. In other words, it's not that you're either here on Earth or you're somewhere else. The soul's energy can be in more than one place at a time, thus the idea of parallel realities or simultaneous realities. Oftentimes, like when I trained with Brian Weiss, he said that on average, it could be 100, 200 Earth years before a soul comes back for a reincarnation.
Really? Okay, that's good to know that.
Yeah, sometimes it can be
instant, right? Yeah.
It could be a long time or never. But keep in mind, Earth time and spirit time are different. But wherever a loved one is, whether they're in the non-physical, whether they're here, they're having a different experience, you can always communicate. Consciousness is non-local, meaning it's not impeded by space distance.
Are there good souls and bad souls? We know there are good people and bad people, but what about the souls?
Yeah, the terms that are used most in the various literature are a beginner and evolve. You know, bad and good are relative terms, number one. Secondly, sometimes what appears to be a bad soul from our earthly perspective turns out to be a contrast soul. In other words, they take on a bad guy role in order to shake people up, wake people up. So sometimes a soul who or a person who doesn't really live in good ways and does hurt others and murders and so on, sometimes they're just beginner souls, and so they're like a kid learning how to walk. They really don't know the difference, and they're just faking as they go along. Sometimes the soul would choose a body and mind impulsively, didn't listen to the guides, and so came down and then got in a body that's bipolar, and thus the inappropriate activities. And as I say, sometimes it will be a spiritual setup where actually a high soul will take on a negative role for the long-term good that would occur. The universe is just so beautifully set up. It's amazing.
Mark, are you a believer that hell exists?
The only hells that exist are temporary, self-induced ones. There's lots of good evidence for that. That's one of the things that drove me to go to theology school, in fact. I like you, sitting there and saying, well, wait a minute, this is a God of love. How can there be a fiery, eternal place of hell?
Exactly.
And I guess people who somehow get that in their head, they end up kind of schizoid, because it really is a schizoid concept. So the original Aramaic meant how you, for both heaven and hell, meant how you feel when you die, and you go through a pathway, mawet was the Hebrew word, and you look at what you did. Now, that was several thousand years ago. Now, let's fast forward to all the near-death experiences that go on with the life review, which is one of the most transformative aspects of near-death experiences. And what do they say? During the life review, you not only see but feel the good that you did or the bad that you did.
I wonder if you show emotion in that review.
During the life review?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's very emotional because you not only see but feel. You feel the ripples. If you killed someone, you see their pain, but also the pain you visited upon in their families,
sure,
how you changed history.
So with this soul, I'm going to call it soul traveling, because that's what's happening here. It's traveling. Do you believe that it goes to other planets, for example? Other life forms?
Yes, it certainly can, and we mentioned that a bit before, that not all the soul's energy is right here on this earthly incarnation, maybe 30% on average. And so the rest of the energy, some of it can be on other planets, in other non-physical realms, experiencing life from the consciousness of a plant as an animal. And part of it never leaves home. Part of it never leaves heaven. And in that sense, part of this is always one with God. Usually, from what I see, souls will choose to come back to the same place, for example, Earth. They're familiar here, they know how things work, and it's a good place to come for growth.
Sure.
There are other souls considered hybrid souls, though, who like to travel to different places in the galaxy, in the universe. And sometimes those souls have a tough time when they come to Earth because they've been to so many places. They don't quite fit in like the average Earthlings.
I'd come back to Earth. It's kind of a neat place.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
When you were working with Eben Alexander, I was just with him several weeks ago in Denver when we were taping our Beyond Belief TV shows. And Edgar Mitchell, of course, who was huge into this area. But tell me a little bit about John Audette. I don't know him that well.
Yeah, he's a fascinating individual who's been a behind-the-scenes guy. He's a system analyst and, in fact, is working close with Irvin Laszlo right now with merging their formidable knowledge. And so John actually was the one who started IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies, in the 70s. He introduced Kubler-Ross and Raymond Moody to each other, which, talk about changing history. He was, when Dr. Moody was a medical student, John met him, learned about his interest, and encouraged him to write a book about near-death experience.
Hold on for a second, Mark. We'll talk more about that when we come back. What a fast night. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Mark Pitstick with us, his book, Soul Proof. Mark, we were talking about John Audette and how he fits into this, all of this, And tell us a little bit more.
Well, as I say, he's been a behind-the-scenes guy. He's not written a book that I know of, but he has launched so many ripples, and you're going to be hearing more about him. And as I say, this merger with Irvin Laszlo as the chairman of Eternia, and that site again, eternia.org, it's just going to be fascinating because, as you mentioned, it's the greatest compilation of science and spirituality. People like Ken Ring, you mentioned Eben Alexander, mm-hmm. Raymond Moody, Susan Geisman, the medium, just the top people involved. Anita Morjani just agreed to be on board, Larry Dossey, and the list just goes on. So this is going to help people awaken to who we are. You know, as Oprah says, when we know better, we do better. And so this is the hope that people will look at their spiritually transformative experiences, whether those are near-death experiences, when a loved one dies, and what they wake up to, and then actually changing more and more people in our world. It's possible. By the way, I'd like to a little follow-up. We were talking about hell, and part of what creates a temporary self-induced hell is when we make, say, less than optimal actions. When I was working in hospitals years ago, we had a case come into the ICU, and the guy's name was Hank, and his life wasn't going so well, so he decided to try to kill himself.
Oh, geez.
Put a shotgun under his chin, pulled it, he had to reach down and pull the trigger, and in doing so, it
slipped
up from the barrel, and it blew off his face.
Oh.
He couldn't see, he couldn't speak, he could hear, and he could still move. He wasn't paralyzed, but he couldn't speak or see. And so the nurses were just, the staff was pretty much freaked out by it because he was 22 years old, and it was just such a horrible situation. I was in theology school at the time, reading everything from Ram Dass to Kubler-Ross, and so, you know, I wasn't intimidated by it. So I went and I just spoke in his ear and said, okay, yeah, you're in a rough spot, but I said, you know, you're still part of life. God and angels are there to help you if you're open to that. And actually, in the long run, this could be a blessing for you and others. And so he indicated he wanted to write something, and he wrote as well as a recently blinded person could, God help me, I'm in hell. And I thought, what a wonderful example of how we put ourselves in hell when we...
Self-induced, isn't it?
Yeah, when we take a lower road than we might.
I wonder how many souls are at that level right now, Mark. That lower level. Lots? What do you think?
Yeah, Michael Newton, again, who I... just his books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, have been so pivotal for me, says that in his analysis, about 85% of souls who come to Earth are beginner souls. Another 12% or so intermediate, and just a couple percent advanced souls. And those are almost always teachers and healers.
And they don't come back anymore, do they, once they get to that level?
Actually, they often choose to.
Really?
What Hindus call bodhisattvas, people like Jesus and Buddha and so on, who don't have to come back for karmic reasons, but out of love, choose to come back, knowing full well that they'll probably suffer and die and all that, but doing so out of love to help teach the younger ones.
Can we assume that God, whatever you believe God to be, can't control the destiny of people?
If God could, then we would be robots. In other words, either there's free will or there's control. So, you know, people say, well, why doesn't God stop this? Why doesn't God make everything perfect? Well, then we'd be automatons. We wouldn't have a choice. And so, as I say, it's a beautiful setup when you expand your mind enough. Speaking of expanding mind, we had a woman in one of our bereaved parents groups named Sandra, and we went around the circle. There were about 20 of us, and sharing the stories. And Sandra said, I had two children, and they both died. And there was just kind of a hush in the room. You could feel the pain. And she said, it's okay. She said, they both have visited with me with after-death contacts. And my daughter, who died of leukemia at age 21, I was getting Sandra said she was getting ready to get into bed, and she heard her daughter's voice in the foot of the bed. And it said, "Mom, can you see me?" And Sandra said, "I can hear you, but I can't see you." And her daughter's voice said, "Then get bigger eyes." And at first it sounded like a flippant remark, but then about a week later it hit me, oh my God, that's perfect communication from Spirit. Very concise, very deep. Get bigger eyes. And it may be the name of one of my future books, because that's it in a nutshell. And so when we get bigger eyes, we see more of the big picture, and we understand why things are they are. For example, you know, why doesn't God control everything and make it perfect?
This evolution that you've gone through, Mark, which has been, I would guess you would say, pretty dramatic, isn't it? Has it changed your views on life and things on this planet, the fact that you're now a believer?
Yeah, totally. And not only a believer, but that I know all this evidence that I mentioned, all the scientific, empirical evidence. Sure, it changes it totally. In other words, if a doctor were to tell me today I had cancer, I'd say, okay, well, let's do the cancer dance. In other words, let's go through that whole thing. And it's also helped people who I get emails, letters every day from people who say, I read your book last year, Soul Proof, and I said, and today I got a diagnosis, I have Parkinson's disease. And I have to tell you that as the doctor told me that, I felt a calm, a peace that I know I wouldn't have had if I didn't know all this evidence that we each are forever beings, life is set up for important reasons, there's a meaning, a rhyme, and a rhythm behind things, even if we can't see it from our earthly perspective.
This little inner voice that we have within ourselves, how do we know it's the difference between us, it's us, or some kind of angelic intervention?
Well, in a way, it doesn't matter, because we're all one. You know, again, we talked about we humans are big ones for categorizing. You know, you got your humans, you got your angels, when in fact, it's just a dance of energy. It's all God breathing. And again, the Hindus, Buddhists had this very well described many years ago. They said, you want to know what life is? When God is, it's God breathing. And when God's inhaling, there appears to be nothingness, formlessness. When God exhales, there appears to be the external, physical formed. And then quantum physics describing the nature of reality the same way. It's a cusp between a wave or energy and particles or matter. And so when we understand that, then that changes the whole ball game, certainly.
Well, it sure does. There's no question about that. So when a person dies and their soul is separated from their body and it goes into this other state, and we talked a little bit about hell, what happens to that separation between good and bad? Do they merely just get reincarnated? Do they get punished? Is there punishment there?
No punishment. You know, that's a bad earthly parent. We can often evaluate what really would it be like in heaven, or how would God be, by looking at how a good earthly parent would be. So, you know, they may get a little spanking, but not burning in hell forever. So when a soul drops the body, goes back home, you know, it depends on who we're talking about. If it's Mother Teresa, you know, it's like walking from one room into another. It was a seamless transition, no doubt. And she probably rested up a little. And then she was saying, how can I help? You know, where can you plug me in here? Somebody like Hitler, at the other end of the extreme, is one who would have to sleep for a long, long time. He couldn't face his life review. We talked about you can not only see but feel it. His life review would have burned up everything about him. And so he had to sleep for a long time, then counseling, isolation, lots of rehab. It could go on for millennia and millennia before he could begin to even get into the stream. So it depends on the person. But eventually, then the soul rejoins their soul group. They're helped by their guides and so on. And they look at, how could I have done better? Where did I mess up? The next time around, what are my goals? And I work on more compassion or patience and so on. And then they design another incarnation to test that and to grow even more. And that's how we step by step get closer and closer to God. Not that we're forced to, not that we're punished when we fall short, which is what the word sin meant, miss the mark, fall short. But it's an evolution as we awaken and realize who we are, and then we live accordingly.
So we talk about this distinction between a good God and one that might not be, yet, in you know, that God has no influence over us. If a child dies, a child sadly dies, God can't step in and make that person live or not. But then there are miracles that happen, real miracles that people just simply can't explain, but they do happen. Isn't that a form of God's message to try to cure an ill or do something like that?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's so many things about the question you just asked. So, you know, first of all, what God are we talking about? Are we talking about the, like, Old Testament version of God? Are we talking about the Supreme Being, the sustainer and creator of all the universe, all life? So, and by the way, this is behind what Nietzsche said years ago, like in the 60s, God is dead, and the Beatles popularized that. He wasn't saying by any means that he thought there was no ground of all being. He was just saying the idea of a local, provincial God, the big guy in the sky, he's our God, our God's going to protect us, help our team win. The idea of that kind of God was dead, and I think for many people it has been, especially after the concentration camps and so on. It just helped people realize that there can't be that kind of personal God, otherwise how to let 6 million Jews and 12 million Russians die. So if we look, though, at God as all that is, the source of all, then we realize, yes, there are miracles. Now, whether those are mediated by angels, by guides, and so on, sometimes it's a person awakening to what's inside, and that creates a miracle. But years ago, I had a miracle of my own, and immediately I asked, why don't we get these more often? And the answer is, it came to me in a nanosecond while I was actually thinking the question. It was a telepathic communication. Was, first of all, we do get more miracles than we realize. Sometimes miracles are preventive, so it just prevented something that would have happened, but we don't know about it since it didn't happen. Miracles won't occur if they interfere with the soul's plan. Let's say a soul designed to come here and get molested, as a case I know of a Unity minister, raped and pregnant and all that. But she designed that because she knew how it would increase her strength of spirit and help her help others. Well, in that case, angels wouldn't intervene and stop the rape because that would interfere with her soul's mission.
Yet so many people don't understand or believe in a higher power. Why not? And even you didn't at some point in your life.
Yeah. Well, I think because religion has done such a poor job. I mean, if the church was a PR firm, they would have been fired by God a long time ago.
Yeah, they would have. And,
you know, just as you mentioned, thinking people understandably reject some of the notions that are taught. And so for many people, it's a process. You reject what you're brought up with. You see that it's limited and full of holes. But then there is that journey, and you find your own answers, and that's partly what I try to provide for people, especially when a child dies, when they're dying, when they've had a loved one die, you know, the toughest of the tough, suicide and so on, and help them make sense. In other words, earlier mentioning, you know, how does God let a child die? Well, first of all, you know, God doesn't cause it. God doesn't do it.
And may not be able to stop it.
Yeah, well, if God could stop them, we're back to the controlling. You know, we're
right
back to God being the puppet master, the big dictator in the sky. And the other thing to remember is that we each are part of God. This is one of the things that almost all near-death experiencers come back and say. And so these are people who had validated NDEs, meaning while they were clinically dead, their consciousness hovered above the hospital outside, and accurately explain or describe events that happened, not having had any exposure to family or friends from whom they could have found that information. There are tens of thousands of documented cases like that, and what they almost all come back and say the same way is, we each are one with the one and part of Source right now. So that's not maybe someday if we join a certain group or believe a certain way. It's the way reality is set up. And so when we realize that, that's very helpful to people who are going through any kind of suffering when we remember our true nature.
We're with Mark Pitstick. Mark, ghosts. People see ghosts. What are they seeing?
Yeah, I like the term stuck spirits because
The
term ghost is so scary for some people. We think it's something that can hurt us. So what we understand about that is that, you know how you hear when people die, they enter the light. They have a.
That's right.
We know this from near-death experiences. So a person has a chance to enter the light. And in fact, on several occasions, as I mentioned in our panel discussion a few weeks ago, I've seen that light emanate from the chest during codes. I'm working on a person, I'm making sure they're breathing and so on. At some point, I just see this white light emanating from the chest, leaving their body. And every time that happened, the doctor said, okay, let's call it, you know, that's it, time of death, 3:45. So most people will enter that light when they see the light. They recognize, like, oh, it's like coming back home. But some souls don't enter light for a number of reasons. They could have addictions, first of all, to sex, drugs, alcohol, material goods, and like they don't want to enter the light because they're not sure they can get their fix or booze wherever they're going next. Some people die violently. They, a lover's boyfriend killed them or something, so they have revenge. So if their energy is so chaotic, if they're really hardcore atheists, for example, they're not going to enter the light because they don't know anything about it. So those are stuck souls then who are kind of in another world. Not totally here, but not totally into the light. And so sensitive people can feel them. One woman who contacted me in Germany, she described that every night she would hear heavy footsteps coming up and down the stairs in her room. The room would get cold. She couldn't sleep. It was very scary. And this went on for weeks. And then finally, she realized, oh my God, this is my son-in-law who was killed in the war last year.
Jeez.
He's afraid. He needs my help. So she went from fear to love and compassion, and she prayed for him. She said, I'm so sorry I didn't figure this out sooner. She brought in a Ghostbuster, a medium, who was able to coax him into the light or encourage him to enter the light, and as soon as that happened, there were no more quote, scary ghostly visitations.
Yeah, these scary visitations that occurred, I would guess they're primarily from ghosts who just want to get back to whatever they were doing. They're confused, aren't they?
They are, and it depends on the person who is experiencing. In other words, let's say a wise yogi could be around the, quote, scariest ghost in the world, and he'd just say, oh, aren't you a funny fellow?
All right, stay with us. Mark, we're going to take this quick break and come right back, a final hour. And yes, we'll open up the phone lines as well with Mark Pitstick, his work, Soulproof.